come. Canto 10, chapter 78. I think we're covering text 34 through 36. All right? Okay, I'm going to read through 34 and 35. We'll do 36 together since the purport's from 36. So let's read the Sanskrit. We can read together. Yurgam ayur batai desha sattvam indriyam evacha ashashitam yatad brute sadhaya yogamayaya. O sages, just say the word, and by my mystic power I shall restore everything you promised him, long life, strength, and sensory power. 35. Vishaya utu asrasya tava viryasya mrityor asmakam evacha yata bhaved vacha satvam yata rama vidhiyatam. The sages said, please see to it, O Rama, that your power and that of your Kusha weapon, as well as our promise and Ramaharshan's death, all remain intact. Text 36, please repeat. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Atma Vai Putrutrana Iti Vedanushasanam Tasmadasya Bhaved Bhakta Ayur Indriya Sattvavan. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Atma Vai Putrutana Iti Vedanushasanam Tasmadasya Bhaved Bhakta Ayur Indriya Sattvavan. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Atma Vai Putrutpana Iti Vedanushasanam Tasmadasya Bhaved Bhakta Ayur Indriya Sattvavan. Vaishnavis. Thank you. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Lord said, Atma, oneself, Vai, indeed, Putra, the son, Utpana, born, Iti, thus, Veda Anushasanam, the instruction of the Vedas, Tasmat, therefore, Asya, his son, Vavet, should be, Vakta, the speaker, Ayu, long life, Indriya, strong senses, Sattva, and physical power, Vahan, possessing. Translation purport by the disciples, Sarvasilandis. The Supreme Lord said, the Vedas instruct us that one's own self takes birth again as one's son. Thus, let Ramaharshan's son become the speaker of the Puranas, and let him be endowed with long life, strong senses, and stamina. Before. Srila Sridhar Swami quotes the following Vedic verse to illustrate the principle enunciated here by Lord Balaram. Angad angat sambhavasi tridayar avichayasi atmavai putrunamasi sanjiva shadarasupam. You have taken birth from various limbs and have arisen from my very heart. You are my own self in the form of my son. May you live through 100 arms. This verse appears in the Shatapatha Brahman and Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. Om Jnana Patandasya Gananjana Sarashtraya Chakshuri Nikami Nirthasmai Shri Devi Namaha Panchakalpa Sri Dishya Kripa Sindhu Devacha Vajtano Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Namaha. Hare Krishna. So it's very nice to be back in New Ramanreti after spending a few couple weeks in India. We were at the Govardhan Eco Village, which is about 50 miles north of Mumbai. Very, very wonderful place. And, of course, being an eco village, they try to live simply in harmony with nature. But they do have some nice guest facilities. But also, in keeping with the spirit, they had no air conditioning. It was about 95 to 98 degrees every day. However, meeting room, they brought in air conditioning. And Rana Swami said it's the first air conditioning they've ever had at the Eco Village. You know, they had to do it for us GBC members who, you know, can't live without air conditioning, I guess. Anyway. What's that? They use a little bit of everything. They use some solar power. They do have regular electricity. I mean, electricity is there actually throughout. But very beautiful place and a nice place for our meetings. Probably looks somewhat like Nameshwaranga, or some of the areas being spoken about here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, it was definitely very rural, very kind of wild, you know, there were cobras and all kinds of things there. And we didn't actually see any, but anyway, it's always very good to be back here in Ramanreti, my home. And we have such wonderful association with devotees. And just in time for this, just very wonderful month of Damodar, and the wonderful worship of the deities in Lord Damodar. So, in this verse, we see that Lord Balaram expertly preserves the benediction of the sages, and he keeps his own killing of Ramaharshan Sutta intact. And of course, we see this often throughout the Bhagavatam, that Krishna and Balaram are very clever, and many things are accomplished, many purposes are accomplished with a single act. So the sages were concerned. They understood why Balaram killed Ramaharshan Sutta, and they didn't really have a problem with that because they could see he was disqualified by his disrespect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, they had given him a benediction. Long life, strong senses, you know, that he'd be able to speak for many years. particularly because I think that this the sages Sviganamishranya, how long was it supposed to go on? 1,000 years. You know, so the, you certainly needed long life, strong senses. In other words, you don't want your hearing and your vision to fail on you. You're going to go for 1,000 years. You needed a pretty good benediction from the sages to be able to do this. So, of course, in a very expert way, Lord Balaram transfers this benediction to Yomaharsh Sutta's son, Sutta Goswami, or Vipishrava, as he is known. And therefore, he kept, because it's considered that the son is representative of the father, by giving the benediction to the son, it kept that benediction intact, and at the same time, he got rid of Yomaharsha Sutta. He could have revived him, brought him back to life. In fact, he kind of offered that to reverse his action. The sage says, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and however you act is perfect. We don't want to change that. We're not contradicting what you say. At the same time, you know, we have this problem with our benediction. So anyway, it was very expertly taken care of by Balaram, and so everything could go on. I thought it was kind of interesting that Sutta Goswami is here being put, in, you know, as the speaker in the Anamishranya for the sages. So this is before the Battle of Kurukshetra, and of course, later he narrates the story, the recitation of Shukadeva Goswami Maharaj Pricket, which actually happened later, right? This Maharaj Pricket was the grandson of Arjuna. So in other words, that was a couple of generations later. But I think what we can, I was trying to figure that out, and what we can understand is this incident happened early at this point before the battle, and then later, because they're basically they're going on here for hundreds of years, later Sutta Goswami hears Shukadeva Goswami recite the Bhagavatam in 7 days to Maharaj Pricket. Then apparently he's later came back and is now at Namishranya with, you know, later with the sages. Then throughout the first canto of the Bhagavatam is basically Sutta Goswami speaking to Shonaka Rishi, right, and the sages. And then Sukadeva Goswami comes in where? We don't have the kids, but this is an adult question. When does Sukadeva Goswami make his appearance in the Bhagavatam? Second canto, first verse, right? He's introduced in the last chapter, and I think he speaks from the first verse of the second canto on, and then he speaks, and then most of the rest of the, well, you know how it is, there's conversations and conversations and conversations, and sometimes it's actually hard to follow, but basically, it's Shukadeva Goswami as Sutta Goswami is relaying from hearing that conversation of Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pricket the rest of the Bhagavatam. That all clear? Okay. So we have here the idea that the son is the representative of the father. There's a natural inheritance of qualities, of opportunities that are there from birth. But we know from our philosophy and what Srila Prabhupada has told us that we also have to take advantage of those opportunities. It's not a given. In other words, we all have free choice. We all have free will. That's one of the qualities of the jiva. Just as Krishna is supremely independent, has supreme free will, the jivas as tiny part and parcels of Krishna, we have at least minute free will and free choice. So because we have that free choice, we may be given opportunities and we may not take them. Or we may not be given so many opportunities and we take great advantage of what we can. So there's really two aspects here. One is that the idea that a lower birth is no disqualification for Krishna consciousness and spiritual life. On the other hand, a good birth is not a guarantee of spiritual advancement. So, Prabhupada explained many ways that spiritual life and Krishna consciousness is not based upon birth, but it's based upon one's qualities, and one's taking that opportunity of Krishna consciousness. And of course, the famous example, Kalan Maharaj is there in the 7.432 purport, Prabhupada says, from this verse we discover that a man is not qualified or disqualified simply by birth. Kalan Maharaj was an asura at birth, son of Hiranyakashipu, the biggest demon in the universe. You would think that would be an inauspicious birth, right? Yet he possessed all the qualities of a perfect Brahman. Anyone can become fully qualified Brahman under the direction of a spiritual master. Prahlad Maharaj provided a vivid example of how to think of the spiritual master and accept his directions calmly. So, of course, in Prahlad's example, he had was given the opportunity, actually even within the womb, right, to hear from Narada Muni. Narada Muni kind of gave shelter to his mother, the wife of Hiranyakasipu, during all the battles and all of that, and when the demigods, I think, were going to kill her because they thought she'd be giving birth to a great demon. And Narada Muni intervened. I have this right, right? Narada Muni? Yeah, Narada Muni had been instructed. Prahlad Maharaj, and of course, he fully understood transcendental knowledge, and he is one of the greatest devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He gives wonderful instruction for all of us. So, of course, sometimes we think, well, these are people in the Srimad Bhagavatam. These are very special people, they have special relationships, they're probably eternally liberated souls. Well, what about us? Well, Prabhupada extended this principle to all of us. This is in a lecture in Bombay on Bhagavad Gita 16:27. He was talking about, this is 1971. So mainly, most of his preaching at that point had been in America and in the West when he's returned to India. And and Prabhupada is very proud, actually, of his American and Western and European devotees, because not so common at that time, Krishna conscious devotees in America. He said, why are these American boys are coming to us? Because they did not get the advantage of spiritual life, but they are seeking after spiritual life. Tato brahmajignasa. They are fed up with the materialistic way of life. They want something spiritual. But because there is no such information, there is no such leader, they are becoming hippies, frustrated, confused. And because here is something substantial, they are taking it. This is the secret of the Krishna conscious movement. And the Prabhupada went on to say, so, those who come to Krishna consciousness, they are not ordinary persons, because Krishna says personally, who can come to him? Yudhavata means the firm conviction that simply by devotional service to Krishna, simply by becoming Krishna consciousness, one becomes perfect in all respects. This is called faith. So Prabhupada talked about his Western American disciples very fondly. He was very kind to us because it was a major accomplishment. Coming to America and making Malechas and Yamanas and worse and lower than Sudras, making us all Krishna conscious. He gave up all of our sinful activities and to take to a rigid process of spiritual life. And Prabhupada says what the main qualification was. He said, this is called faith. So we had some faith. And actually, we didn't know much about spiritual life when, you know, we were attracted to Krishna, but we didn't know a lot about Krishna. So our main faith was actually in Srila Prabhupada. Right? It was faith in Srila Prabhupada, faith in the guru that brought the Western devotees to Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada exhibited all the good qualities that we're talking about, all the qualities of a Brahmin beyond that, all the qualities of a Vaishnava. And because we saw those perfect qualities, a perfect person, this is somebody we could follow. And with faith in such a perfect person, one is able to take the spiritual life and understand, and somehow that understanding, that realization, you know, was put in the heart. Injected into the hearts of those disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And that continues. That continues to this day. Devotees who are becoming Krishna conscious, who are coming to Krishna consciousness, are getting that same, developing that same faith and getting that same message, because it is being transmitted through the sacred procession, one spiritual master to another, and that message remains intact. And the fact that Srila Prabhupada's disciples are continuing to give that same message as it is, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, actually shows the potency of Srila Prabhupada. It's Prabhupada's, part of Prabhupada's glories that he had the potency to be able to inject Krishna consciousness in his followers so that we can continue. Now we're fourth generation devotees now. So this process is continuing generation after generation, because pure spiritual knowledge given by Krishna through the succession handed down to us from Srila Prabhupada and on downward. So, when one becomes Krishna conscious, all good qualities develop. We may have had no qualification, we still have maybe no qualification, but still some good qualities develop. In a lecture in London, 1973, Prabhupada said, so people are trying to elevate the status of the society by so many things, but they do not know the secret. The secret is that one who's trained only to become a devotee of Krishna, all good qualities automatically will be visible in his person. There's no need for separate endeavor. How to make a man honest, how to make a man religious, how to make a man high-thinking, simple living, all of these qualities immediately develop. Now, this, of course, is always an interesting question. Sometimes it seems almost paradoxical. Does that mean we do absolutely nothing and we're just going to manifest all these wonderful qualities, like, magically? No, not really. It comes about through the process of purification. That's what Prabhupada is talking about. If we take to the process of Krishna consciousness strictly, and if we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, then the process of purification of the heart begins. And when the heart becomes purified, the pure spirit soul is more and more exposed, is more and more is coming out, and therefore those spiritual qualities of the soul become more and more prominent. So we see as somebody when becomes purified, when one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, we see so many good qualities that are there. Now, of course, sometimes we also see lingering qualities of an artist may also be there, but that's part of the process of purification. We can't expect after so many lifetimes in this material world that somehow instantly we'll become purified completely. So it may take some time. I remember when we were new devotees, you know, we were thinking, oh, you know, it may take a couple, 3 years. And people are thinking, we're thinking probably maybe 5 years we'll be pure devotees, and then we'll take over the world, you know, and then everyone in the world will be Christian. We had lots of faith. Almost unlimited faith that sometimes was almost unrealistic. No. But we soon learned that Krishna consciousness was not a cheap thing. It wasn't so easy. It takes work. It takes endeavor. It takes showing Krishna our sincerity through our constant devotion, through our constant practice, through performing the simple acts of sadhana bhakti that Srila Prabhupada gave us day after day, year after year. But it's not mechanical. It's not mechanical if I chant so much, if I go to so many mangal arjits, then I get pure. No. What we're doing is we're showing Krishna our sincerity through hearing and chanting and worship of him. And then Krishna, and through the agency of the Guru, helps to purify our heart. And that purification comes about through the process of hearing and chanting and bhakti yoga. So the other side is, one may have a good birth and good qualification, but not so much take to Krishna consciousness. You know, I mean, Rama Maharshi and Sutta had some qualification. They alluded to earlier something about his mixed birth may have caused some of his problems and disqualification, but still, he was a qualified Brahmin in many respects, but yet he wasn't a devotee. He did not worship Krishna and Balaram. He disrespected Balaram, in fact. And therefore, Balaram had to do what he did with his famous Kushagraha weapon. Interesting, he touched him. So we may have good birth, but not develop a good quality of devotion. Chaitanya Charitamrita Antarlila 469. I'm not sure whether this is the verse of the purport. I'll probably figure it out as we go. One may be born in a Brahmin family and have all 12 brahminical qualities. But if he is not devoted to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who is a navel shaped like a lotus, is the verse. He is not as good as a chandala, who has dedicated his mind, words, activities, wealth, and life to the service of the Lord. Simply to take birth in a Brahmin family or a brahminical qualification is not sufficient. One must become a pure devotee of the Lord. If a svapacha or chandala is a devotee, he delivers not only himself but his whole family, whereas a Brahmin who is not a devotee but simply has brahminical qualification cannot even purify himself, what to speak of his family. So there again, we see sometimes people are born in Brahmin families or seem to have some qualification. They have some knowledge of the Vedas. They know who Krishna is. Sometimes we see this in India or the Indian population, Indian congregation. Not a congregation so much, but, you know, I guess we could call the sort of Hindus in general. They may have some knowledge and some brahminical qualification, but if they're not devotees, it's really of very little value, is what's been described. I bet you time to help you. And in a Bombay lecture, 1973, Srila Prabhupada says, so here is clearly stated, daivi sampakti moksaya. If you do not develop your godly qualities, then there's no question of liberation. It is not a fashion that you do anything nonsense and simply talk on Vedanta and talk while smoking, and you become liberated. It is not so easy. It is not so easy. You have to form your Vedantic character. Then you understand this philosophy. So character and qualities are essential. Even so, it's not a question of birth. It's not a question of having some knowledge of Vedanta. One has to have the character and the qualities of a Vaishnava. And Prabhupada emphasized that over and over. If we're not developing those qualities, then all the rest is of very little value. Sometimes we see that even those born in Vaishnava families may or may not take the Krishna consciousness. We see that even our next generation of devotees with their children, some take to the process really strongly. You know, some at least partially take to it, and they at least consider themselves devotees. You know, they may or may not, you know, participate in so many of the processes of sadhana, and some don't at all. So we see this wide variety. Even though the opportunity is there, still, one has to take Krishna consciousness. One has to make that individual choice. And as I speak with young people, I understand this more and more. And it's something that, of course, we realize even from developmental psychology, it's kind of a common phenomena, that at a certain point, children grow up, they individuate, as we say, which means they kind of decide who they are. I mean, not just who my parents are, what I was taught. I mean, we did the same thing. We, like, as young people that age, we broke away from everything in American culture and became devotees. So it's not that surprising that our children have to do the same thing. They have to make a decision at a certain point. And, you know, I was speaking with some of the devotees who, young devotees who are working with youth, like Gopinath, I don't know if you know Gopinath, son of Rajagiri Hari, and some of the other devotees, and I think they're from Houston, like that. You know, they've had these programs. Some of you may have been involved, or has anybody been involved in some of those programs with you? One of the things that they do that they were talking about is helping young people, you know, like teenagers, like that, come to the understanding, what is it they really believe? What is it they want to do? What are the choices they want to make? Because everyone has to make their individual free will choice to be a devotee of Krishna. Even if you're born as a devotee of Krishna, at a certain point you have to say, yes, I am a devotee of Krishna. And we see many young people do. And sometimes with some help and some encouragement and good association they can be helped in that process of understanding their identity, really. You know, because, you know, we always talk about identity formation as part of this individuation and things we have to go to. But in Krishna consciousness, we're talking about the real identity formation. The real identity is spirit soul. You know, original Sarup as devotees of Krishna. So we have to all understand that. And even if we don't fully realize it, we at least have to make the choice that this is what I want. This is what I want to work to. This is what I'm striving for. To become a pure devotee of Krishna. May not be a pure devotee now, but at least that's the goal. The goal is there. And once one accepts that as one's goal, to be a devotee of Krishna in this lifetime, then Krishna gives us all help. Krishna gives us the help to come to that time. So sometimes it's difficult. Even Prabhupada's children didn't really become dedicated devotees. I mean, I think they were devotees to some degree. But, you know, they didn't have the kind of dedication that Srila Prabhupada had, certainly. We can see, again, every, you know, one is given the greatest opportunity. Can you imagine if Srila Prabhupada, your father, pretty overwhelming. it's hard to imagine, but sometimes that's a common psychological phenomenon, isn't it? Children sometimes don't recognize their parents for who they really are, but, they're just parents, In other words, if I was your father, it might be hard to understand my father is a devout guru, Brahma Hamsa, a savior of the world, founder of Charya. That might be hard to see. I can understand that. But other than that, devotees can understand, and devotees can make those choices. Devotees can see where real spiritual knowledge is. So we all have a duty to try to help people to come to Krishna consciousness, especially to help younger people or children or those under us or new people or wherever it may be, to help people to make that decision and understand their real position as devotees. There's a Prabhupada said in Calcutta lecture. He's talking about the children. He says, they are given a chance to take birth in a family of Vaishnava father and mother. From the very beginning of life, they are getting encouragement. We had such opportunity. Prabhupada's talking about his own very exalted birth. He often talked about how his father taught him a Danga and he did Rathi Yatra and they always encouraged the Vaishnava sages to come. So Prabhupada had this wonderful opportunity of a very nice Vaishnava family. Said, we had such opportunity. Somehow or another, we have come to this stage. Similarly, these children, they are getting opportunity from the very beginning of life. So on the whole, it's very hopeful that in the Western countries, not only Western countries, but especially Western countries, we have sown some seed that a community, Vaishnava community, is now established. So Prabhupada was very concerned that we have this continuity of culture, that we establish communities, that we establish generations of Vaishnavas. Not just that make a lot of followers, have a big, some religious movement, and then goes away. No, it has to become infused within the culture, and it has to carry on generation after generation. This one's a little heavier, but I'm going to read this anyway. It's just something to make us a little thoughtful. Although, anyway, here goes. Srila Prabhupada's lecture in Los Angeles, 1975. Children's nature is to imitate because they have to learn. So nature has given them the propensity to imitate. So the first imitation begins from the parents. So if the parent is nice Krishna devotee, naturally the children become devotees. That is the opportunity of taking birth in a Vaishnava family. So you are all Vaishnavas. If your children do not become Vaishnava in the future, then it's great, a great fault on your part. So you should be very cautious, careful that children are not going astray. They're becoming actually Krishna consciousness. That means you have to imitate. You have to be devotee, and they will imitate. By imitation, they will come to Krishna consciousness, and they will never give it up. It's interesting. Prabhupada talked about this a lot, about imitation. And he explained, even like when he was in Dallas and with the Gurukula, he often said that the best way of training and teaching is through whatever we do, children will imitate. He understood the principle in psychology. There's a theory of learning called social learning. Albert Bandura was one of the main people in that. And a very strong part of that theory is about modeling. That people learn not just through direct rewards and punishments, but by observation. Observational learning, this is a very, it's a very accepted understanding of the psychology. I haven't been teaching that course right now, so I'm thinking about it, online. So observational learning or modeling means that young people learn from seeing others. And who are the best models? In the beginning, the parents are one of the strongest models. And then, of course, older people, older children or teenagers, and anybody with some status or like that. So for young people, they have their models. And if they're exposed to good Krishna conscious models, people who show and exhibit Krishna consciousness in their character, their behavior, and their activities, then naturally they will come. But it needs to be positive. Role models need to be positive. In other words, they show something that is attractive that people want to emulate. if we're really just negative about Krishna consciousness, oh, I just have to do this, it's really hard, it's really miserable, that's not going to inspire anyone to want to emulate us. So Prabhupada often talked about that devotees should be happy, should be joyful, sometimes if you don't even feel it, it's kind of good to exhibit it, because you kind of get in the mood yourself. Like Prabhupada said, if you're not enthusiastic, what do? You become enthusiastic. You act enthusiastically, and you will eventually achieve some enthusiasm. So we have that concept through the Prabhupada. And as we model those qualities of our own engagement in Krishna consciousness, our own sadhana, our own faith in Srila Prabhupada, in Srila Prabhupada's movement, in Srila Prabhupada's books and instructions, then that becomes part of what children naturally imitate. And it works not just for children, but anybody, newer people or younger devotees, anybody who's coming to Krishna consciousness, if they see our example, then they imitate. So we need to set that example. We also need to give those opportunities, make them available for the next generation devotees, whether it's new people coming or whether it's their own children. And we need to, of course, engage those people in Krishna conscious activities. So that will help us to give those proper opportunities so that those who are inclined can take to the process of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Otherwise, you should have followed on. Awesome. For the Sukhada. We have a.
I was reading an article on how you were speaking about that, the modeling, and traditionally, forever, it's just the main example, the main role models have been the parents, the school, and the church. Those have been the main role models. But it's not like that now. There's so many kids who are latchkey children, and they don't have so much association with the parents that the media has become a major role model. Between TV and video games and movies and Netflix and this and that, that those have taken a major role, because one of the reasons that there are so many problems with the youth that are brought out there because of the big disruption.
It's very interesting because another strong role model is considered to be those with perceived high status. And for young people, a lot of times high status means what? Movie stars, rock stars, sports stars. And, back when I was a kid, which was, some past centuries, I remember there was this idea like sports stars were supposed to be role models. And, what kind of role models now? It's like they're all getting arrested. And, not all. But, you see it all the time. It's like a lot of these, and these music people in music, it's just like all kinds of terrible activities and terrible role models, like you say, and those become a very strong influence. It's interesting that you said that traditionally the church, the family, parents, and the school, were those strong influences. And if those were, reasonably in the mode of goodness, not that they always are, but then they provide strong support for people growing up, and now that's breaking down. As Mother Sukhada was saying. So I think that means even more that we have to provide for our own children very strong examples. We have to have strong schools, strong families, and of course, with the sweep of a strong church, we have to have a very, very strong, vibrant temple community that's supportive of everyone, and people feel welcome to come, and people, gain spiritual from that they're helping you. How can you not be inspired just walking in this temple now? Yeah. But we need to bring people and welcome at this point.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So earlier you were speaking about the importance of maintaining culture and for the culture to continue. So interesting because, there's many discussions of what exactly is the Vaishnava culture, if it's the different roots from the Vaishnava culture, the Indian culture, if it's this or that, that maybe the Vaishnava culture is more the qualities and etiquette. So the question is, you can explain what are like the core aspects of the Vaishnava culture that can be implemented into other existing cultures?
Wow, that's a great question. I might take a whole other class. Very complicated. It's very interesting. What is Vaishnava culture? Because sometimes we confuse all sorts of different elements. Indian culture, Vedic culture, Hindu culture, American culture, and it's all kind of mixed in there. And what is actually Vaishnava culture? And of course, Vaishnava culture is really based upon, devotional service, bhakti yoga, hearing and chanting, the nine processes of devotional service. But those in themselves, don't create a whole culture. So in other words, you need a culture that supports those processes, right? And that's, I think, what's a little tricky. And I would contend that we're still developing that. We're still struggling with that. We've been here 50 years, and I think we should have it more together, but it is what it is. And in historical time, that's relatively new. It's only a couple generations, as far as a religion that has a very, very different culture sort of implanted into the Western culture. So, experience, with our Indian congregation, it's pretty easy, They kind of get it right away. It's culturally feels compatible, right? It's kind of like, yeah, okay. It's in other words, they've already learned a lot of this and they know about Krishna. And, it may require a deeper understanding of bhakti yoga and Krishna consciousness. But the cultural aspects are fairly easy. And I think for Westerners, it's not so easy, and it does take some adaptation. Of course, Prabhupada emphasized, so much basically the hearing and chanting, and especially the chanting of the holy name. And I'd say that one of the most fortunate things that we experienced, and of course you're a wonderful example of this, is that so many of our next generation have a real attraction for the holy name, with the chanting Hare Krishna, which is the essence of spiritual life. So I think that's a very favorable beginning to the transmission of culture to the next generation. But then I think, honestly speaking, that many young people need to kind of come to the next step, where they qualify for initiation, they've got to know the process of sadhana, and some do. Some of you have very nicely. And some lesser than. So I think that's part of our challenge, because that's really part of Vaishnava culture too, is, the whole package of sadhana, accepting the spiritual master, those sort of things, like an initiation. So, I think if we can really stay with the basics and then try to create those institutions which are going to be supportive of the basics of Krishna consciousness. There is a concept, of course, of Varnashram, which is very lofty. It will take a lot of work. It'll probably take years and years to establish a whole culture based upon the Vedic principles. But I think at least in the beginning, if we can establish the culture of the basic nine processes of devotional service and try to carry that on, and carry on the tradition of our sampradaya. It's a huge discussion. I'm sure people have other ideas and thoughts on it.
It seems like from traveling, we've gone out to Africa, Australia, like the six continents, it's interesting because what it seems like keeps the culture, of Islam, within all of these places, what you're saying is the sadhana, it's the regulation, tilak, deity worship, and all of these things, and initiation, and definitely that makes it feel like a quote-unquote franchise, or, that you feel like you're in the same place, but in different parts of the world. So, it's like, does it mean that we, when we go to other cultures or different, are we convincing people that taking to this process of this sadhana, of this regulation, of the deity worship and this thing, to include that in your culture, these are the certain things that you should implement. Is that what's, is that what's going to make the culture like?
Yeah, well, I believe that, what you're saying. And like you said, what are the commonalities when you go to India and you go to Australia and you go to Europe and you go to a temple, and what is it you experience? Those are things you're describing. You're describing those commonalities of Vaishnav culture that we find everywhere. And that's why we kind of feel at home. You know, you go to a temple in some part of the world where you've never been before. I mean, I haven't traveled a lot, but I've been to India and Hungary and Italy and a few places. And basically, you kind of go into the program and you're just kind of familiar. You know, they're singing the same songs, right? You know, and it's not like, wow, this is strange. Where do I fit in here? So in that sense, we are creating a universal culture. And I would contend that those things are very important. You know, I would say my opinion is, rather than trying for us to adapt too much to the host culture or the, you know, whatever the culture is, what we try to do is, as much as possible, bring Vaishnava culture and bring people to that, because, you know, it's naturally attractive. It actually is. And people are attracted to the Holy Name. I've heard so many people, sometimes we think, well, people can understand the deities. And I've heard so many stories of devotees who came and saw the deities. You remember that devotee who was here? I forget, he was married to one of the lady here. He was a Methodist minister. You know who I mean. He was in Dallas, Gabriela's husband. I forget his name, but he was in Dallas, and he told me his story. He told me that he was a Methodist minister, you know, searching for God, pretty sincere guy, religious man. He walked into the Dallas temple, saw Radha Kala Chandji. He says, "Finally, I know who God is." You know? And I've heard other devotees have that experience, you know, when they so we don't have to be hesitant about people seeing the deities or, you know, who's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is education. This is part of our job of preaching Krishna consciousness, our outreach, our training and teaching people this philosophy, just as Prabhupada did. Prabhupada presented a completely sort of strange culture, very different culture to us, and we accepted it. So that's part of faith, I think. Faith is having that conviction that if I present Krishna consciousness as it is, as Prabhupada did, in the Nuda Srila Prabhupada, you know, and Prabhupada was very liberal in many ways, you know, I mean, he was always thinking of new ways and ways to, you know, it's not we have to be completely stagnant and, you know, we can't think outside the box. No, Prabhupada said, use your intelligence to spread Krishna consciousness, you know. And so sometimes, you know, we have to think of, you know, best ways. Like, how do you preach in the very, very heavy Muslim countries? You know, you go out on Harinam Sankirtan, you probably end up in jail, you know, or worse. You know, so use the internet or, you know, different ways that we can, you know, in other words, you have to think of ways that we can present Krishna consciousness that are appropriate and creative and like that, but the basis is there. And of course, we can always go back to our acharyas and the scriptures. Rupa Goswami gave us the five principles of devotional service. You know, chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, living in a holy place and associating with devotees. And that's exactly what Srila Prabhupada gave us. You know, if we emphasize, I think, those basic principles, we can't go too far now. And then sometimes be a little bit intelligent and creative about how to, you know, how to give them to people. Okay, I think we had Yamaraj and Madhuda, did you? Anyway, okay, anytime. We're getting a little late. I mean, if some of you have to leave, I won't be offended.
How are you going?
Thank you.
I was, you know, in this discussion about culture, I heard a lecture, I think a couple of weeks ago, I forget if it was Prabhupada, one of his disciples, and Prabhupada was saying that the temple environment, temple, Krishna conscious culture, this is the culture, you know, so we come to, like me, I came to Krishna consciousness, so I start going to the temple, I have something, if I'm not working, I go to the temple. There's always some kind of program around somewhere or something like that. Now, as far as the general populace, it's sadly to say, I had to pick up a customer in McDonald's the other day, And I was observing these people. They bring these very young children in there, and they're feeding these hamburgers and things like that. And they're indoctrinating them in this very bad culture. Putting the meat and food in the bodies and like saying that the demons who are running the media, they're responsible for putting all this misinformation out. You know, and it's our job as a lifestyle to kind of, infuse our, what comes out there in our culture into the, this so-called culture. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it's important because unfortunately, Kali Yuga, the culture has gotten worse and worse and worse. It's hard to just accept, you know, pick up the elements of the prevailing culture and sort of utilize them because, you know, so many of them are really negative.
Well, how do you? I think the basis of our faith in Srila Prabhupada was the 26 qualities of the devotee.
Hmm.
So if we're following those 26 qualities, that's the segue. That's how people from the outside will appreciate us. And then they'll begin to inquire, well, how are you following these qualities? You're manifesting these qualities. Where are they coming from?
Yeah.
That are, you know, they're looking at it.
Absolutely. That example modeling again. We show good example. I remember the first devotees I met at a rock festival. And you can imagine the activities that most of us were engaging in at rock festivals. And I saw the devotees and so they were happy. And they weren't taking intoxication. And they were happy. And that's what I want. So yeah, it works. We see good qualities and people are attracted.
I was in Bhagavad Gita 9:30, the Bhagavad says that for all of us, we should see this two tracks of our life. The inherent nature of the soul, the servant of Krishna and the devotion of God, our ultimate. At the same time, I'm infected by the three modes. And that's also need to be accommodated and adjusted. And how both has to go. This is what culture boils down to. Each person, what about another country? Even within Alachua, each individual has two different straps. But Prabhupada says sometimes it goes smoothly, sometimes one goes off, and one has to be paying attention to the step that our devotional path remains steady. And material path also has to be supporting, accommodating, not just ignoring them. Because it will be not possible. So that has to come. I was thinking like in that research of Brahmanda Bhramite Kono Bhagavan Ji, Guru Krishna Prasadu Jai Bhaktila Kavya, the famous verse Prabhupada quote, that the initiation is kind of, or devotional practice from the Guru is kind of like a mango, seed, Guru seed. And within the seed, the plant, leaves, fruits, everything is there, but it's not visible to a devotee. So, Prabhupada made this point in the purport that the devotee should always water in and make sure the sun comes to the, and the fertile ground, the seed is planted. And as far the looking for, you know, abha, prema, looking for ecstasy, and all things automatically, naturally, appears in due course of time. One should be completely focused on following the Guru's instruction and sadhana. As for the achieving and all these things, it's naturally coming from the seed, it sprouts, and we don't have to endeavor for that. It's self manifestation.
Very nice. Thank you very much. Okay. One more, I think it's our last question. It's 9 o'clock.
I think the culture, the four very prominent features of any culture is Vesh, Bhasha, Bhojan and Arahana. Vesh is how we wear things like Vaishnava dress, yogi and that kind of thing. And what we eat, like we are vegetarians, and the language, Bhasha, okay, what, and so we predominantly the Vaishnavas are, they spoke Sanskrit or languages which derived from Sanskrit, and the Aradhana, like W.G. Vasquez and how and what are the methods of worshiping these our spiritual beliefs. So I think those are four the dominant features of any culture.
Do you know where that comes from? Where is it? I don't know. Okay, thank you.
So because first time when I came here, our culture was changing to Western culture. The first time I came to the temple, it was Govardhan Puja, and I saw a few Indians here. We are all in jeans and t-shirts and all. And I saw all the devotees in Vaishnava clothes. So that's when I, and even the, we used to go to Burger King, Street, fries and this and that, and our bhojan was changing too. And probably in the next one or two generations, our kids will forget that we came from India, because of the way they dress up, eat, and even they stop going to temples, and all that will change. That's the culture change.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, you had some of those seeds of culture that were revived more easily, maybe. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, we should probably end here. Thank you very much. I'm pleased to see you both. Thank you.